For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning. I'm Brian Taylor, and I know most of you. I'm a student like you, so in that spirit, we'll talk today. I'd like to approach things a little differently than we often do here, and that is this talk will be divided into four fairly brief sections, and I'll introduce each one of these sections, and I'd like to have a little discussion about each of them as we go. So I'll invite that as the time comes each time. The subject for this morning's talk and conversation is Shikantaza, which I think all of you are familiar with that term, translated often in English as just sitting, the approach to Zazen that is central to Soto Zen practice. So one of the things I like to do in study sometimes is when I either discover a book or an area of interest, maybe several texts, I like to, as I'm reading slowly, to take quotes from them that that speak to me strongly, and write them down as I go onto a computer, and save those in a document, and then later go through them and in some way or another kind of consolidate them or order them or make them into verses or something, just kind of play with them. And that way it helps me to kind of stay with those texts a little longer than just a brief reading. And I did that with this book that's mentioned at the top of this handout, The Art of Just Sitting, which is all about various original sources on the subject of Shikantaza, and I found it incredibly helpful and moving to read a lot of these texts and to have them together in one place. And so I extracted a whole bunch of quotes and of various lengths, and then eventually, after Taigen invited me to give a talk today, I thought, well, this might be a good subject. And then I began to weed out a lot of them so that we could have a manageable number to look at today. So we're not looking at lots and lots of words. What I'd like to do is have someone read each section on the first page here. I've titled "Be Curious, What Is This?" and the two quotes, and have someone read them, and then I'll introduce it and we can discuss it. I've divided this into four areas. I looked at sort of the things that really spoke to me after I did this kind of reading process, and discovered that in at least one way of thinking about them for me was to look at them from four different points of view. This is not linear, it's not comprehensive, it's simply four different points of view about Shikantaza that struck me as I was going through this process. The first of them is, and it's about what happens when we do Zazen, or some of the things that happen, or that I've experienced in Zazen over time. And the first of them is discovering that we can be curious and ask ourselves, what is this? Secondly, discovering emptiness, and we'll say more about that. Discovering then something more. And finally, the kind of commitment and confidence that comes with this practice. So the beginning on the first one, maybe Kathy, you could read the first quote from Shakyamuni Buddha.
Bhikkhus, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, the four foundations of mindfulness. Abide contemplating the body as body, feelings as feelings, mind as mind, and mind objects as mind objects.
And then Jane, could you read the next one?
When you hear a sound, instead of remaining outside of it and thereby fighting it, just become that sound yourself. Really being that sound yourself. That sound won't disturb you anymore. The me that perceives the sound becomes one with the sound, leaving only the sound itself, that is, emptying yourself.
Okay, I put these two together under this kind of category that I came up with of being curious, and it's one of the first things that strikes me about Shikantaza is this business of being curious about what this is, this moment, in all of its complexity and change and richness. And the first quote from the Buddha, there's obviously a lot of different ways of interpreting this short text, but also the discourse from which it's taken. And one way of looking at it that I've been using has been to observe the body as body, the mind as mind, even circumstances as circumstances, in a way that discovers both the changing nature of the body as we sit in zazen, the changing nature of mind, the fluid nature of reality, and its impermanence, but also and more strikingly to me maybe is observing, learning to observe phenomena without. Or below our commentaries, our definitions, and entering into direct experience of what is this, the body as body, the mind as mind, mind objects as mind objects. What is this? As an example, to make it kind of concrete, many years ago, when I was about, I don't know, 15, I think, or 14 maybe, I used to swim on swim teams when I grew up in California, and we would gather for practice at high school, and in the winter was during the season, and it was outdoor pools, so it wasn't indoor at that time, and it was often in the Bay Area, kind of foggy and cool, maybe kind of damp feeling. And I remember standing there, and then the coach made us line up, you know, in our little suits, you know, racing suits in the cold, and he talked to us for a while before we got in the pool. And we'd all be standing there. I was freezing, and I remember one moment, I'll never forget it, when something popped into my mind of, this is just cold. This is just cold. Because my mind had been going around, as we often do, what the hell, what are we doing? This is so cold, I'm going to freeze, I don't like this, when are we going to get in the pool? All this sort of interior commentary that happens. In the same way that might happen if, let's say, on your way home, if you're driving today, you might get into a fender bender. Immediately, all this commentary comes in, and dislike, and all our preferences come to the fore, and all that. And in that moment, standing there in the cold, it was like something was like, this is just cold. This is what it is. And I experienced the cold as cold, below even the name cold, the word cold. What is the, and it was like, what is this experience? What does it really feel like? And I can't really describe that to you right now, but at the time it was very liberating. And it was actually, I could relax. It was sort of like, oh yeah, I've got goosebumps, but I'm relaxed standing here. And I don't need this to change immediately. And so anyway, that was sort of an early experience in my life of experiencing the body as body and being curious in a way of what is this? What is this? And it's something that I carry with me into Zazen in terms of what is this moment. My Zumi Roshi has then has some wonderful things that he says about the non-dualistic nature of this kind of curiosity and this kind of questioning, what is this in Zazen? And he uses sound as an example. And I love that because of a musical background. Some time ago, I gave a sort of a demonstration talk on the composer John Cage, and we made some sound music together and asked this very question, what is this sound? When we hear something we so often identify it, like a motorcycle goes by, then our mind goes, motorcycle, that's what it is, and we dismiss it. And if we can ask ourselves sometimes, what is this? We actually hear it, and it becomes interesting, and a part of our reality landscape, if you will, that is constantly changing, and in its own way, beautiful. And without the self-centeredness of saying, I am here in this room and there's this motorcycle out there and I like it or don't like it or it's loud or, gee, I wonder if it's a Triumph or a Harley or whatever, there's just this sound. And the sound is not me and it, but the sound. And Maizumi points that out, that it's no longer me that perceives the sound, but only the sound itself. And that is a kind of self-emptying. And it's an example of this kind of curiosity, this asking, what is this in Zazen? So that's the first of these four themes. What are your thoughts from these readings that you see in that section of being curious, or anything that I've said, or anything out of your experience? Yeah, Chris.
Sorry, I'm not going to dive at all into this. Well, I guess I will, but I really liked what you said about your experience with being cold. I moved here from Texas, which never ever gets cold. Well, it got cold anyway, so it's all done to me, I guess. But that's something I've been working with recently, because, you know, my first winter here was just an actually endless sequence of just, like, it's so incredibly time, and just like, how can I get away from this cold that just permeates my bones, you know? So lately I've been working with these feelings, and it's just your description of it really spoke to me, because it, just the other day, when it was extremely windy outside, I was standing up at the Irving Park Brown Line stop, it's elevated up, and so there's nothing in the way of this wind, and so I was just standing there, facing out towards where it's coming from, and I just kind of like gently held onto the rail and just kind of let the wind kind of push me. It was quite strong, and just kind of like, I feel like daggers sometimes, but it was, I just kind of stood there and just sort of experienced this, you know, frigid wind, and it was okay. Like, it just kind of, it was cold, it was windy, and my eyes were tearing up, and the snot was running away, and it was, et cetera. But it was just kind of, you know, like I didn't need to go anywhere or get a run away from it. I could be there. And it was just a very, very similar experience. And so thank you for sharing that. It's been a really powerful sort of practice for me. I just wanted to share it.
Okay, sir.
I had a couple of responses. Like, in thinking about this, you know, so, I think curiosity is a very nice addition, maybe, to the Dharma that you speak about here, in the sense that I sometimes wonder about dissociation in this kind of practice. Attempt to avoid difficulty through hollowing out experience in meditative states. And then it reminded me of sort of the antidote to that, which I think is curiosity and intimacy. I had a similar experience, I'm sure we all have, of like being in a circumstance where something that brought up aversion comes into our sensory or experiential realm. I remember one time I was late for a session. Not a good thing to do typically as a Zen student, but my plane was delayed and I was raced over to Green Gulch Farm, and I entered the Zendo, and everybody, you know, had been sitting, but it was like maybe a third or fourth period at the beginning, entered the Zendo, sit down and like, get to relax finally, go for it. And all of a sudden, a fly came and sat on my cheek. sit outside. These things do happen. Sometimes spiders are in the sun, don't we see? And I was like, is this thing going to be here like the whole sashimi? And then I had this experience of just going, I wonder what's going on here. Like, I could see my mind wanting to, like, should I move? Right? Should I get rid of this fly? And I could feel, I said, let me just settle with this being here. And I could feel its little feet on my cheek. And they secrete like a little sticky substance. And, it was approaching my eye. So I just closed my eye. And there was this sense of like, oh, this is, how do I have a relationship with this experience? But it was interesting to see the power of the aversion, right? Like flies are kind of disgusting. I'm like, oh man, it's probably in the compost pile and it's depositing some deadly bacteria and then die. Like all this stuff comes out. but I just feel like, you're bringing up this great point about, although you see feelings as feelings, I think there's a richer texture to that. Mm-hmm. The fly became more than just like a fly.
Right.
It was an experience of connection.
Right. And the thing about this that's so powerful is that we're practicing it in this little way in Zazen, and it trains us in being able to say yes even when things are extremely difficult, in a time of loss or great pain or any other kind of traumatic experience, maybe not necessarily in the moment or sometimes in the moment, but maybe eventually adding to the pain and the difficulty, the curiosity, makes something shifts. And there is a kind of a yes, especially when it's something difficult that we can't change. So I'd like to move on to the next theme here, and that's discovering emptiness, and have the next two people read the next two quotes with a little pause between, if you would, Wade.
Zazen reveals the total reality of interdependent origination. When we let go of thought, we put our whole being in the reality of interpenetrating reality. This is how we are verified by all beings.
The most important thing to bear in mind when practicing Zazen is to completely let go of everything. Since the brain's secretion is nothing more than a normal function, everything that arises can be viewed as the scenery of our lives. This has been described as the most fundamental appearance of things. The basis for silent illumination is to entrust everything to the posture of Zazen, without trying to work out solutions for what we ought to do about this or that. This is what is called chitta.
So, as we sit and are curious about this moment, this reality, what is this self that is manifesting? We discover emptiness in Shikantaza. And emptiness is that term that we're all aware of, really has to do with interpenetration, interbeing, Thich Nhat Hanh calls it, impermanence, that everything is flowing and moving together and evolving together as one, almost, I think of it as one giant changing organism. Including what we think of as the self. And that does not deny the self or the particularity of individual elements of that reality, whether that's people or certain circumstances or whatever, but it says that it's all part of one flow, all part of one ever-changing, moving reality, and there is no separation between its elements. And so that's one of the things we discover in that curiosity, is this emptiness. And Shohaku Okamura talks about the total reality of interdependent origination, and putting our whole being in the reality of interpenetrating reality. Well, to put our whole being in that is an interesting phrase. What strikes me about that is that it's a way of saying yes to an emerging consciousness that we discover, and it's very different from I am sitting here having these experiences. I am sitting here, and there is this sound over there, and there is this time that I'm sitting, and there's this other people who surround me in other parts of the house or whatever. And it's really a very different experience. And, you may ask, why does that matter, this kind of awareness of this interdependent experience, and why do we invite it or say yes to it in Zazen? And it has to do with what Dogen says in Genjo Koan, to carry the self forward and experience myriad things is delusion. I mean, it's suffering to say, here I am, and I'm going to go out there and make things happen and bump up against things and get what I like and avoid what I don't like. That's delusion. And when we begin to discover all myriad things as self, as manifesting themselves with what we call me, as one organism, there's much more flexibility and much more ability to respond in that kind of a stance, and it makes a huge difference in terms of how we relate with the other elements of this one reality that we call the world around us. Uchiyama then really says, this, what's going on in the mind during this, as far as this kind of emptiness is and fluidity, is the secretions of the brain. And, don't get too attached to it, because it's going to change in a moment. And you don't necessarily, because it is a secretion, you don't necessarily have control over it any more than you have control over your dreams at night. It's just flowing. It's part of the flow. And to bring, again, curiosity to this kind of emptiness, and trust also, as he points out, without trying to work out solutions, but simply to be aware as it is happening. So what might you have to say about this kind of emptiness that we discover in Zazen?
Is whether it's possible to do Zazen, really, whether you're just signing up to experience Zazen in a focused manner on certain occasions.
Yeah. And Zazen is doing Zazen.
Yeah, Zazen is reality constantly flowing, but I'm sitting down, I will now do Zazen. You're sort of it's kind of, maybe, I don't know, but if it's always happening, maybe there's times being here and the last 35 minutes being an example of a time when you're committing to being open to being focused to that flow of reality.
Maybe in a sense it's a process of subtraction rather than addition. I mean, I think of it that way sometimes, that what's being subtracted is the commentary or the conditioned self, that, or maybe not even subtracting it, just understand, kind of putting it in its place. Because there's something else going on, which is everything else, that is our... I won't say any more about that.
Having the lens get wider.
Right.
If you're So if you put something in its place, then there's a definitive box around which it's moving forward or sideways, or, you know. But if like there's no real intent to the box, then how do things move? I know they do, but.
Yeah. Dropping off managing, you mean? Yeah, yeah.
The word enjoy, just
enjoy, yeah.
Enjoying some flow that's always there, yeah. Always comes.
And the flow back and forth between what's going on in the brain and everything else, it's just in this previous time of sitting this morning, I was, after, you know, I don't know, a minute or maybe an hour, I don't know how long it was, of the brain being very busy and running around doing this whole thing, it's just sort of like, boing, wow, busy brain. And then I sort of heard the heater, you know, it's like, whoa, okay, that too. Yeah.
I really like the Shyam where she also talks about settling, like the light, I forget exactly how it faces it, but about, you know, settling into self, you know, that it is only the self, just this sort of, you know, maybe I'm just not looking for it, but for me at least, I feel like I started to.
Let's go on to the next theme, discovering something more. And let's have the next two people, I guess, Chris, that's you, and Helen, read the next two quotes.
Inner constancy always exists. The mysterious spiritual power is never exhausted, but always shines clearly. This is called your Buddha nature. Believe these words.
Of this practice of suchness is not in words, yet it responds to our energy, it responds to our effort, it comes forth and meets us.
This is one of those themes that is both very attractive and somewhat problematic for me, having a Christian background, because it sounds a lot like things that people in other religious traditions talk about a lot in terms of spirit or grace or divine presence or whatever. And of course, it's very different in Buddhism because there isn't the dualism of a being who is separate and independent who is being described in this. But there's something more that happens beyond the conditioned self and the independent will and the ability to understand and what I can accomplish sitting here on a cushion that has its own life, that has its own particular wisdom and life direction, that is responsive to my individual will and effort to say yes to that, to be present, to understand, to you know, change, if I need to change or whatever, there is something at work. I've never done this, but I'd be very curious to talk with, maybe some of you have some experience with this, to talk with a Zen Buddhist who is deeply involved in a 12-step recovery program about higher power. What do they do with that phrase? What is that like for them? But that's just a curiosity on the side in terms of my own experience. It's important as a Buddhist to say this inner constancy always exists, but doesn't not existing as a kind of substance or being, but rather maybe more it always is. Maybe that kind of existence. It always is. No matter what is happening, it is. And it's never exhausted. And then Reb's wonderful quote that it responds to our energy, to our effort, and it comes forth. And I want to throw in one more short quote that relates to this from Hangzhe Zhengzhui much earlier, who has this phrase, realize the self that is not possessed by emotions. And when I first read that, I thought, well, he's not saying realize that the self is not possessed by emotions, but realize the self that is not possessed by emotions. Manifest the self that is already present, the self with a capital S, as some Buddhist writers refer to it, the self that is not controlled and possessed and entirely consumed by circumstances and preferences and attraction and aversion. What is that self? We can come up with a million different names, Buddha nature, Dharmakaya, various things, but there's something at work, and that's something we discover in Zazen as well. What are your thoughts on that theme or your experience of it? I've forgotten who it was recently. I was reading it, kept referring to it as the energy of life. I like that.
Yeah, I feel like this is all I ever talk about right now. Because I'm reading so much, that's why I just finished the whole way and just reading everything that Shyam Roshi read. He talks so often about the reality of life. He replaces a lot of, like, you know, Buddha nature or Buddha, things like that, with just, like, with just life, and the reality of life, and the reality of, or the self that is only the self.
But there's something maybe recognizable about it, or it isn't just whatever. There in our tradition, you know, we have teachers who can recognize that energy, that spirit, that nature, when it is manifesting in a person. Or recognize that it isn't there, or that they're off the mark on it, or something. There is something to it that is. I mean, we use the word compassion. It's about compassion. It's about a lot of things we could name, but it has a character. Characters.
Yeah, I suppose that's the meaning of Buddha, you know, Buddha recognizing Buddha, or something like that. Just reminded me, and I always talk about Mahakashyapa and the flower, the smile that he had, and that was sort of like totally and completely undivided, direct oneness between of self seeing self, the biggest self that you were talking about, of just. It's not, there are two there. It's not two beings seeing each other. And that's why it's so direct, right? It's just, it's just the undifferentiated, this thing that we keep trying to put a word on, but we can't really put a word on. It just kind of, there's no, I'm trying to make somehow make a physical example of it, but there's no, it's completely not separate.
Well, this leads us into the last theme here about in Zazen. One of the things we discover is that we can trust what we're talking about, all of this. We can trust the emptiness, and we can trust the impermanence and the inner beingness, and we can trust the something more. And we can place our trust in it, and be committed. And so let's have the next two readings from that.
Intelligence or lack of it does not matter. Between dull and sharp-witted, there is no distinction. Concentrate your effort single-mindedly. That in itself is negotiating the way. Practice realization is naturally undefiled. Going forward is a matter of everydayness. You have gained a pivotal opportunity in human form. Do not use your time in vain. You are maintaining the essential work of the Buddha way.
Zazen is to just become present in the process of Zazen itself. The process is you. All we have to do is be constantly present. Right in the middle of the process of Zazen. This is Shikhan Taza. You can do it.
Yeah, so there is this sense of there is some kind of doing. You can do this, but I like the feeling of these words that is about we are maintaining the working of the Buddha way. We are maintaining a process going forward. We are not in control of it. We're not managing it. We're not willing it into being. We're not doing it because we understand it finally. We are maintaining this way, that is, finding its way into manifestation. And this is a pivotal opportunity to be a human being, to do this. Life is precious and it's short. And so the question is, how do we want to use it? This business of commitment is not about nose to the grindstone. I'm going to make myself enlightened by, grinding against the wall here in some kind of willful activity. But this is it. And discovering in Zazen and through Sangha and through the Dharma that we want to be this process, as Katagiri says. We want to be this. We want this process to be who we are. And there are times in our lives when we sort of give ourselves to that, whether it's taking vows or a moment of clarity about what is important and what isn't, or an experience of death around us, or looking at the Han out here and what it says, or something else where we go, this is me. This is what I want to engage in, and I can have confidence in it because it will. It does manifest. It is manifesting. I can do this. So what are your last thoughts on that last section there? Yes, Kathy.
I was thinking about words letting go. And really seems to fit here. And it brought back an image, as we were talking earlier too, like the idea of combining with a sound or letting yourself go with a sound. I can relate to that. But the other thing, years ago I was in Mexico, New Mexico, on vacation, and I was staying near the Rio Grande, and they said the water has slowed down, it had been a flood, they said it slowed down enough, people can swim again. So a bunch of us went swimming in the Rio Grande, and it was still moving really fast. And I remember once I got in, it was like, oh my goodness, should I be here? And then it was like, no, it's manageable. So you just float and go. And there was something about just being with the river. There's something about that I think is hard to do. There's such a focus on managing things in our lives that, you know, in a day-to-day, maybe it's taking the time to just be with what's going on right around you. Maybe somebody's trying to make contact with you or say hello, or if you slow down enough, you see it, but we're managing and moving and not so present sometimes with the things around us. I especially like the Anderson's idea of it responds to our energy, it responds to our effort, and it comes forward to me. And so I don't completely understand that, but I really like the sound of it. That this emptiness responds to our energy, but it does mean that we have to work with this in terms of being our true selves.
Yes. Anyone who hasn't had a chance to say something yet or would like to share something?
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.